Good morning. Our last case this morning is 2021-166, Michael P. French et al. Versus Ascent Resources Utica LLC, Appalachia. For the appellants, Mr. O'Farrell.
Madam Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court, my name is Josh O'Farrell. I represent a family who owns 175 acres in Jefferson County. They're the appellants in this matter. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. No one will argue today that controversies involving Title II or possession of real estate are not excluded from arbitration under Ohio law. They are. Rather, the point of disagreement is whether the claim asserted by the appellants in this litigation triggers that statutory exclusion. That claim is one for declaratory judgment, in which the appellants seek a judicial declaration that Ascent Resources Utica failed to satisfy certain mandatory requirements necessary to maintain the oil and gas leases in effect beyond their primary terms, resulting in those leases terminating by their express terms and operation of law, and the fee simple determinable created by those leases reverting to and revesting in the appellants. The Seventh District Court of Appeals, in reversing the trial court, concluded that appellant's claim for declaratory judgment failed to trigger that statutory exclusion. In doing so, the Seventh District refused to apply this court's clear precedent as established in Chesapeake Exploration versus Buell and Brown versus Artex Oil Company. The precedent established by this court in Buell and Brown makes clear that in Ohio, oil and gas leases affect possession and custody of both the mineral and surface estates. The Seventh District refused to apply this precedent when it held that oil and gas leases are not issues concerning Title II or possession of real estate. This court's precedent makes clear that oil and gas leases are grants that transfer a fee simple determinable in the oil and gas estate to the lessee during the term of that lease. Again, the Seventh District rejected this precedent and mischaracterized the nature of oil and gas leases in Ohio when it held that oil and gas leases at issue in this case do not grant Ascent Title II or possession of real estate, and only permit Ascent to use the appellant's property to search for and produce oil and gas. This court in Brown held that an action to recognize the reversion of mineral interests following the alleged termination of an oil and gas lease by its express terms and operation of law is not an action upon a written contract. Rather, it is akin to that of a quiet title action. The Seventh District refused to apply this precedent when it rejected this argument, failing to recognize that the claim asserted by the appellants in this matter is the substantive equivalent to that of a quiet title action. Notwithstanding the fact that the Seventh District recognized in its opinion that actions to quiet title are controversies that directly involve questions of Title II or possession of real estate and are therefore not subject to arbitration under Ohio law, a point Ascent also concedes. The Seventh District's conclusion, Your Honors, that appellant's claim fails to constitute a controversy involving Title II or possession of real estate and is therefore not excluded from arbitration under Ohio law, is tenable only by that court's rejection and misapplication of this court's precedent. Appellants request this court reverse the Seventh District Court of Appeals and reinstate the trial court's decision. Doing so will, one, reaffirm the fundamental principle that Ohio's appellate courts and trial courts are required and bound to follow and apply this court's precedent to the legal issues before them. Two, restore clarity to Ohio's lower courts that actions in which a lessor seeks a judicial declaration that an oil and gas lease terminated by its express terms and operation of law as a result of a lessee's failure to satisfy certain mandatory requirements identified in the lease constitutes a controversy involving Title II or possession of real estate and is therefore not subject to arbitration. And three, ensure that lessors seeking such a declaration are not forced to arbitrate such claims in clear violation of this state's longstanding public policy to the contrary. After thoroughly analyzing the competing arguments, the trial court correctly determined that this case presented a controversy of both title and possession of real property, and as a result, was excluded from arbitration under Ohio law. In elevating substance over form, the trial court emphasized that it is the potential result that triggers the statutory exclusion, not the grounds asserted for that result. The trial court recognized that if it declared that the leases were valid, then assent would retain all possessory rights associated with those leases, including the right to use the appellant's surface estate to build permanent facilities, such as wells, roads, pipelines, and telephone lines. However, if the court determined that the leases expired and terminated by their express terms as asserted by the appellants, then assent would lose all of those possessory rights as they would cease to exist the moment those leases terminated.
Mr. O'Farrell, when the lease was renegotiated or provisions were added in 2014, the provision on arbitration was any questions concerning this lease or performance there under. So if it's a question of performance on declaratory judgment, can that be excised from the greater issue of affecting title to determine that narrow issue of whether or not the lessee had actually performed under the lease?
Thank you, Your Honor. This is not a controversy relative to contractual performance or non-performance. As Justice DeWine aptly observed in the oral argument in Brown, just because a lease terminates or a contract expires doesn't necessarily require that a breach exists. There's no breach here. As such, there is no question whether or not performance or non-performance was due. Rather, whether assent commenced operations as required in order to perpetuate this lease beyond its primary term and into its secondary term was a purely discretionary act. Assent could either commence operations by fulfilling those obligations in paragraph 33 or not. But if it chose not to, that doesn't constitute a breach of contract. It's for that reason that the appellants did not assert a claim for breach of contract, because their failure to commence operations did not result in any damages to the appellants. Rather, it simply operated to terminate that lease by operation of law. Recognizing that this case constituted a controversy involving both Title II and possession of real estate, the trial court went on to cite the Seventh District case, In Re Ball. In In Re Ball, the Seventh District Court of Appeals recognized the following precedent as established by this court in Buell. Precedent the Seventh District chose to ignore and completely contradict in this case. That precedent is: oil and gas leases are title transactions. Oil and gas leases grant a fee simple determinable in the mineral estate to the lessee, with a reversionary interest retained by the lessor that can be triggered by events or conditions specified in the lease. The rights and privileges granted pursuant to an oil and gas lease are sufficiently vast to affect possession and custody of the mineral estate. Oil and gas leases affect the surface estate because the lessee enjoys reasonable use of the lessor's surface estate to accomplish the lease's purpose. And last, oil and gas leases affect possession of both the mineral and surface estates. After considering and applying this court's precedent, the trial court correctly concluded that appellant's claim for declaratory judgment constituted a controversy involving Title II and possession of real estate and was therefore not subject to arbitration. The Seventh District reversed the trial court's decision. In doing so, the Seventh District rejected and/or ignored this court's clear and binding precedent as established in Buell and Brown, despite its obligation to follow and apply that precedent to this case. The Seventh District's decision was constructed on the faulty legal conclusions in direct contravention of this court's precedent. One, the Seventh District held that even though oil and gas leases create an interest in real estate, they are not issues concerning Title II or possession of real estate. There is no dispute that appellants hold title to the Sutherland Farm and no indication that appellant's Title II or possession of the Sutherland Farm is at stake, regardless of how this action is resolved. Two, resolution of appellant's claim for declaratory judgment seeking a judicial declaration that assent failed to satisfy certain mandatory conditions required to maintain those leases in effect, resulting in the termination of the leases by operation of law and their express terms, does not involve issues of title or possession of real estate. And three, the oil and gas leases at issue do not grant assent title to or possession of real property and only permit assent to use the property to search for oil and gas, and therefore this controversy is not excluded from arbitration pursuant to revised code section 2711.01b1. Significantly, your honors, in its opinion, the Seventh District recognized that a claim to quiet title constituted a controversy involving Title II or possession of real property and would therefore be excluded under Ohio law. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time, your honors, for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you. Counsel, you have to unmute yourself, please, Mr. Berker.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Matt Blickenstrafer on behalf of the Appalee Assent Resources Utica LLC. Your honors, what does it mean for a controversy to involve Title II or possession of real estate? The question doesn't answer itself because many, perhaps most, real estate disputes implicate title or possession, even if only in theory or indirectly or tangentially. So there's a line that must be drawn here, your honors, and the question is where to draw that line. The landowners here offer and urge what is in fact a very broad interpretation of the exception to arbitration, cabined only by an artificial limitation to this specific type of case. But Ohio courts of appeals have long adopted a narrower interpretation of the exception and in general apply the exception to disputes in which the title or possession questions are directly presented, not to those disputes where an effect on title or possession might be an indirect result.
So let me ask you, here, this was, they titled their claim an action for declaratory judgment. They could have just as easily called it a quiet title action. Why should the title, and I think a quiet title action is pretty well assumed is a is exempted from the Arbitration Act. So why should it matter if they call it declaratory judgment instead of quiet title action?
Well, I agree with the premise of your question, Justice DeWine, which is we need to look at the substance rather than the labels and the form of the complaint here. To look at it from the other direction, to try to get the answer to your question, they didn't have to say anything at all in this case about title or possession. they could have presented a declaratory judgment claim that simply asked for an interpretation of paragraph 33 of the addenda to these leases and how that fit within the context of the leases as a whole. That's really what their case is about. And with that declaratory judgment armed in that hypothetical case, this case would have been over because everything else would have been decided as operation under operation of law. The issues as to the lease's continuation or its termination are questions that would happen automatically. They flow automatically from the interpretation issue of the lease. So yes, they could have styled this perhaps as a quiet title action, but again, the substance and the crux of their claim is an interpretation of certain lease provisions.
Even if they had styled as a quiet title action, do you think you could make the same argument you're making today?
I think I could, Your Honor, in the context of this case and perhaps in other cases, because I think our whole position here is that we need to look at the substance of the claims and not the form they're presented in, because otherwise what is sure to happen is that claims will be framed in a way that is designed to avoid arbitration clauses. They will be framed in a way to try to link in a title question, a possession issue. No matter how untenable that linkage may be, so you know, I would suggest, Your Honor, that the substance of the claims and the core of the case is what's important here, not the label that gets slapped on it. I believe I heard opposing counsel agree with that proposition, and I guess we just disagree in the context of this case about what looking to the substance of the claim means in this case.
But Mr. Blickensterker, if there's a dispute about whether the lease has expired, it still affects title, doesn't it?
If there's a dispute about whether the lease affects title, it will eventually could, I should say, in the context of this case, affect whether the mineral estate is still, whether the lease is continuation or not, and in whether the lease is expired or terminated by operation of law. The point that we're trying to make, Justice Bruner, is that that's several steps down the road, and it's not even clear that the plaintiff's theory will get them there. And so what we have is an argument about a particular provision of the lease, which perhaps maybe through some chain of events may and arguments may tie into the habendum clause in this lease, but we don't know this at that stage, at this stage of the litigation, and in fact there may be, you know, if their theory is wrong, there's no issue whatsoever here about title or possession. And as I indicated, that title of possession issue is one that's determined by operation of law here anyway. It's not a case where we're fighting about whether the lease was validly entered. We're not fighting about the identity of parties. Those things are all not in dispute. We know who the fee owners are. We know that Ascent is the successor in interest here. We know that this lease was entered. And we know that if certain events occurred or not occurred, the lease may or may not continue by operation of law. But none of those things are central to this case, Justice Bruner. And your question to opposing counsel, I thought was, I would like to follow up on that because I think it's a great point. And it feeds into the point I made earlier. You asked, you know, is there a performance issue here that's sort of separable from the impact on title or possession? And the answer is yes, there is. This case could have been framed, as I indicated, simply as a deck action that asked for the interpretation of paragraph 33 and how that the interplay of paragraph 33 of the addenda with the rest of the lease. And that's all the court would need to decide in this case, because everything else flows automatically from that one way or another. I would suggest, Your Honors, that the narrower interpretation that has been the prevailing approach of the Ohio Courts of Appeals for decades is in fact the appropriate one here for a couple of reasons. First is the text and the structure of the statute itself. The General Assembly's chosen language is narrower than the category of all real estate disputes. And its language limits the exception to particular types of real estate disputes. In addition, this exception is in the very statutory provision that creates Ohio's strong public policy of favoring arbitration. So where we have a statute that is pro-arbitration and should be liberally construed, its exceptions should be narrowly construed. And here, the exception for a particular type of real estate dispute should not swallow the pro-arbitration rule as to other real estate disputes. Second, as I indicated earlier, the broad interpretation urged by the landowners will encourage creative pleading, and it will reward efforts to avoid arbitration agreements. It is possible in many arbitration or in many real estate disputes to come up with some theory or a remedy, such as rescission or specific performance, that seemingly turn a typical real estate dispute into some dispute about title or possession. By way of example, a dispute over whether the property falls, or whether a use of property falls within or outside the scope of an easement, could be turned into a dispute over possession, because the argument would go, that use impacts the owner's possession. Or a commercial lease dispute over which party is responsible for certain repairs could be turned into a dispute over possession, because the landlord might argue that this breach justifies termination of the lease. We think this is exactly what has happened here. The landlords have an interpretation of a specific provision that they say, through some further interpretive processes, gets us back to the habendum clause. But the crux of this case is about the interpretation of certain provisions of the lease. And it's the form of their pleading, not the substance of it, that is creating the argument here about the application of this exception to arbitrability. And
is the problem here that they want too broad of interpretation of the Ohio Arbitration Act, or is it that the Ohio Arbitration Act is unduly broad and maybe the legislature should narrow it in line with what other states have?
No, I think inherent in the structure of the statute, Justice Wine, is this tension between the broad general rule, which has been adopted many times by this court, acknowledging that the statute evinces a strong public policy in favor of arbitration, with this exception. And so when there's sort of this inherent tension there, where you have any statute with exceptions to it, and you have to figure out where that line is going to be drawn, and suggest here that the line ought to be drawn along the lines that the courts of appeals have done, in a narrower fashion. I don't think that the argument offered by the appellants is, it's their argument is simply another place on the spectrum of where this line gets drawn, Your Honor. And I think respectfully suggest it's in the wrong place on the spectrum because of the basic proposition about statutory interpretation, as well as the point about encouraging creative pleading in order to avoid arbitration clauses.
Mr. Blickenstorfer, if I look at 2711.01b1, It starts out saying that controversies involving title to or possession of real estate are not subject to arbitration, with the following exceptions. So, but a lease has to do with the possession of real estate. It's not just title. So how do we, and I'm looking at these controversies and I'm not seeing in A through E anything that specifically addresses the situation at issue here. Can you help me?
Yeah, I'll start with the latter part of the question first, Justice Bruner. The parties agree that none of these exceptions apply. The parties agree that none of the exceptions to the exception apply to this dispute. So then, you know, the follow-up question is potentially, what do we make of that? And my answer to that question is, I don't think we can make much of that. No party has argued that we can somehow back in to an interpretation of the exception by looking at the exceptions to the exception. And frankly, I think that would be very difficult. The exceptions to the exception aren't all of a piece. There are several of them that relate to kind of payment or rental type issues, but then there's one involving boundaries. So they don't, in my mind, it's hard to try to back into some interpretation based on the exceptions to the exception. In terms of the basic language of the exception, Justice Bruner, I think it's important that the language says that it doesn't apply to controversies involving the title to or possession of real estate. So that suggests to me that you can have title or possession issues involved in a lawsuit simply because real estate is involved. They might be indirectly involved, only in theory involved, but we're looking for a controversy that involves that issue. And the controversy here is about the interpretation of certain contract provisions and how they interact with each other. Is it possible to say, you know, take a very broad view of that and say, well, it does involve title to or possession of real estate because you're fighting about this lease? Yes, that is possible, but I would suggest it's not appropriate because of the pro-arbitration statute, the fairly narrow language of the statutory text itself, and the goal of avoiding situations where parties can avoid arbitration through carefully crafting a pleading to seek the right remedy or to put the right label on the claims. Your Honors, I would like to see, I'm in my last 20 seconds here, and I would just briefly like to say, Your Honor, I think the appellants have waived any argument about the scope as opposed to the enforceability of the arbitration clause, and particularly about their slander of title claim. I do want to apologize to the court and to counsel for inaccuracy in our brief in which we said they had never raised the scope issue prior to this court, but in fact they raised it in response to our point in the Court of Appeals that they had already waived the issue. So they have not offered up a proposition of law on either of those points, and so I would just like to suggest to the court that the slander of title claim issues, as well as any issues about the language and scope of the arbitration clause, have been waived. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. O'Farrell, you have 2 minutes and 40 seconds. You have to unmute yourself, Mr. O'Farrell.
I apologize, Your Honor. Thank you. I'd like to start by saying it's not uncommon that lessors and lessees disagree whether a lease terminated by its express terms. In fact, that was the very case in Brown. It was contested whether or not that oil and gas lease had terminated by its express terms, and evidence would be considered relative to whether or not the lessee in that instance continued to produce oil and gas from the well in paying quantities. Nonetheless, this court determined that the judicial declaration sought by the appellants in Brown was the substantive equivalent to that of a quiet title action. The appellants herein seek the same judicial declaration. As such, it follows that the judicial declaration sought by the appellants in this matter is akin to a quiet title action. Going back to Justice DeWine's
Counsel, then why did you call it a quiet title action?
We didn't believe we needed to, Your Honor, because the declaration sought is same in substance to that of a quiet title. The Viking, Rudolph versus Viking Resources, which the Fourth District held that the declaration sought was akin to a quiet title action, which was affirmed by this court in Brown, said that very thing. But I'd like to go down that road for a minute. Consider this point.
But the allegations between those two causes of action are somewhat different. The result may be the same.
The result is the same, and the declaration prayed for would be the same. And as I said, in Brown, this court determined that such a declaration was equivalent to a quiet title. But again, I'd like to go down that road, because under the Seventh District's analysis, had the appellants included a claim called quiet title along with their claim for declaratory judgment, the Seventh District would have concluded that the quiet title action triggered the statutory exclusion and was therefore not subject to arbitration, but that the declaratory judgment claim failed to trigger that statutory exclusion and therefore was arbitrable. That would result in the trial court retaining jurisdiction over the quiet title action and staying that case pending the declaratory judgment action proceeding through arbitration. Both the quiet title action and the declaratory judgment would be seeking the same relief, but the former would be deemed to constitute a controversy involving title to or possession of real estate, and the latter would not. I think that example crystallizes and highlights the absurdity that has resulted as a result of the Seventh District's failure to recognize the judicial declaration sought by the appellants in herein is the same in substance as to a quiet title action. I respectfully request that this court reverse the Seventh District, reinstate the trial court, and find that the declaratory judgment sought by the plaintiffs in this matter constitutes a controversy involving title II or possession of real estate and is therefore excluded from arbitration. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement and you will be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you adjourn court, please?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.